Well, good morning to all. The title of this morning's sermon is On God's Time. And I guess I was scheduled to preach November the 2nd, which was ended up being right around the time that Jolene's uncle died, her Uncle Earl. And I really struggled that week because I felt like I was trying to move my work schedule around so that I could have time to go to the funeral and not mess everything up. And then I had preaching on top of that. And so I don't know how it is for some of the other ministers, but I can't just find a scripture and go preach on it. I don't know. Sometimes God just. It's like he brings something to my attention to my life, and gives that to me to share. I really struggled the first couple days of the week, trying to come with something to share, and it just didn't feel like anything was coming. And looking back, I know that part of it was, or it was my fault, because I didn't feel like I was going to get to share it anyhow because of the funeral. I knew he was going to pass away sometime that week, probably, but I couldn't. I just couldn't, I guess, pour myself into it. I didn't consider it a waste of time to study, but in a way it felt like, you know, why prepare, because something's going to happen, he's going to die, and I'm not going to get to share it anyhow. But finally I gave in. I don't know if it was Tuesday, and I said, well, I'm going to prepare because I don't know what's going to happen. And it was on that time that that God revealed to me that I was on His time. I was on God's time. God has a plan for everything. And I guess that was maybe Tuesday that God gave the message to me, or gave me the title. And Jolene's mom sent a text on Wednesday morning, I think, and in her text that she sent, she said, "I guess he's on God's time," and it was kind of a confirmation to me that that's what God was wanting me to share on. But anyway, so I was reading through, kind of going through the Old Testament a little bit, and thank you. And that's when I came across the life of Joseph. And I love Joseph. Joseph and David are probably my favorite Old Testament people. But I love the story of Joseph. And so we're going to go over the life of Joseph a little bit, kind of hit the high spots maybe. But I'm going to start reading in Genesis 37. Verses 6 through 11. And it was when Joseph had his dream, and most of us know pretty much about Joseph, so we're not going to give you his whole story. But Genesis 6, 37, 6 through 11, he's talking about his dreams that he had. It says, he went to his brother and he said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. You'd think he would have learned after the first one. They hated him already. But he went back to him. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. And this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. I can just see his, you know, Joseph's excitement as he was, you know, had these dreams and he wanted to share them with somebody. And so, you know, the only people he had, he shared them with and made them angry. And then, I guess my thought is Joseph's life was a lot of ups and downs. Joseph, you never really heard of him complaining and about some of the things he went through. But then, so Genesis 37, 27, and 28 is where he went to his brothers in the field, and they threw him in the pit. And I can just see Joseph, you know, we've all been, you know, maybe the smaller guy on the basketball court at some time, been picked last or whatever it may be. We've all been rejected, but to be thrown in a pit by your brothers, I don't think any of us have ever been through that. And then verse 27, it said, "Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So the Midianite merchants came by. His brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. That kind of hit me where it says, after all, he is our brother. You know, let's not kill him. We'll just sell him, you know. And it's not like they needed the money, but they wanted to be rid of him. And that's another thing. I guess if Joseph was living in our world, he'd have needed lots of counseling. But it's like Joseph, it's almost like Joseph was so, even at that age, he must have been tuned into what God had for his life. And then the next thing is chapter 39, 1 through 5, where he goes to Potiphar's house. And verse 1 says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field." And, you know, you can think of it as coincidence that he just happened to be bought by this Egyptian that was one of Pharaoh's guards, the captain of his guard. But, you know, the next part is where he gets thrown in prison then. And, you know, it's not just any prison he gets thrown into. He gets thrown into the prison where the king's people go to. It's not a prison for criminals. You know, that's, you know, maybe the worst people or whatever. But he gets thrown into, I guess, a higher up prison. But, you know, God has a plan in this. And I'm sure that Joseph, you know, after he got brought to Potiphar's house and he made it all the way to the top of Potiphar's house and he's over everything that Potiphar has and he's kind of living the good life now, you know, he's like, "Okay, God, I understand, you know, you put me through some hard times and now I'm good." And then God throws him another curve. And he throws him in jail. And then chapter 40, he gets thrown in prison. Sorry, 39, 20, and 23. Joseph is in prison. It says, "Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. And if you're noticing, you're starting to see a little theme there. The Lord was with him. And something that Potiphar picked up on and said the Lord was with him. And now he's in prison, and the Lord is with him again. Joseph could have moped and complained and went over and sat in his cell, I imagine, and said, I don't deserve to be here, I'm just going to sit here. But he didn't. He threw himself into whatever he did, and I guess he decided he was going to make the best of every situation he came into. But he trusted in God. And just, it really hit me as I was reading through this, how it kept saying the Lord was with him. And the Lord gave him success in whatever he did. And when he came into somebody's house, when he took over, everything that they had was turned over to him. You know, how quickly he rose up through the ranks. And then we see where Joseph interprets, he gets thrown in with the cupbearer and the baker, get thrown in. And we're going to read verse 40. We'll start at 7 and read maybe 22. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in the master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to him, "In my dream I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cups, and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." So you can see he gave him his interpretation of his dream, and he said, "Remember me when you get into Pharaoh's company. Remember me, you know. Show me some kindness and get me out of here." And so the next guy, the baker, said, "When the baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, 'I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head.' This is what it means," Joseph said. "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat away your flesh." Now the third day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. You know, I don't know how you can go through what the cupbearer just went through. And he heard the dreams that were interpreted to him, and suddenly forgot him. Maybe he was so excited on not being hanged like the baker was. But it says he forgot him. And I don't believe that it was just maybe a coincidence that he forgot him. But I think God had a plan in this. And I can see Joseph, you know, maybe hearing the story of what happened, you know, that his interpretations were true. And thinking, okay, the cupbearer, he's gonna remember me. He's gonna get me out of here. He's gonna talk to Pharaoh for me. And he waited. Nothing happened. And I can see Joseph maybe getting a little discouraged, but still hanging in there. And then chapter 41, verse 9 through 14 is when Pharaoh had had his dreams and no one could interpret them. And all of a sudden, verse 9 says, "Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, 'Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own.' Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh." Here's another thing of God's handiwork. God's timing is in on this. You know, he just happened to be in the same prison as the cupbearer, you know, of Pharaoh. You know, any other prison he would have been in, you know, there's no way he would have been able to get to Pharaoh and be brought up. And then it goes on down verse 39 through 44 where he's promoted to Pharaoh's right-hand man. "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, 'For as much as God has shown thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art.'" Sorry, I'm reading King James Version. I got to get over to NIV. "Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning as wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you.' So Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put gold chains around his neck. He made him ride in a chariot as the second in command, and men shouted before him, 'Make way!' Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all Egypt.'" Pharaoh realized as well that that God was with him. I guess verse 37 says, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" So Pharaoh realized that God was with him. And then we all know what happened in the next coming years that they went through and stored up. And then it brings us to where Joseph met with his brothers. And he'd already met with them once. And, you know, Joseph wasn't angry with his brothers. You know, I can see nowadays, you know, you see your brother that did you wrong and you want to, you know, well, now who's bowing down? You know, his dreams were coming true, and he wanted to kind of, he could have kind of lorded over them, but he didn't. He did test them, you know, to find out whether they were sorry for what they did or whether they had changed their ways. But then first Joseph, Genesis 45, 1 through 7, said, "Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, 'Have everyone leave my presence.' So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still living?' But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence." I can just imagine his brothers realizing that this is Joseph who they had sold. And now he's the guy who's holding their lives in his hand. Now what's he going to do to us? But Joseph wasn't holding anything against him. "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come close to me.' When they had done so, he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will be no plowing or reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Not only was Joseph not angry with them, he didn't want them to be angry with themselves. He didn't say, look, I'm not mad at you. Look, God had a plan in it. No, he said, do not be angry with yourselves. Do not be distressed. Do not be worried. And then he sent for his father, had him brought with him too. And brings us to chapter 50, verses 19 and 20. And this was after the father had died, after Jacob had died. And his brothers were worried again because dad's gone. The only reason he kept us alive, the only reason he didn't throw us in prison was because dad was alive. He didn't want to hurt dad. So verse 18 says, his brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So he still wasn't angry with them. You know, it was 17 years that they held on to that. You know, they were worried, you know, yeah, Joseph, he didn't throw us in prison, you know. But what's going to happen when dad's gone? What's going to happen when dad's gone? And now dad is gone. And the first part of that, a couple of verses before that, they came up with this letter that they said their father left. And, you know, they were scared. But I think Joseph knew that God had a plan in it. And, you know, our lives are the same way. Sometimes things don't quite turn out the way we thought they would. And you know, sometimes I was thinking about it, and it's like God has a plan for our lives. And if we'll follow His plan, some of the things we go through may not be what we think is the best thing. You know, the struggles that we have, we can't see any value in them. You know, God, why am I going through this? God, why is this happening to me? But God is preparing us for the next step. If you think about a building, you know, you're trying to put a building up and you don't have a plan for it. And you think, well, I'm just going to start building something and, you know, I'm just going to build it as I go. That doesn't come out too good. But God has the plan. He knows what the end project is going to look like. And He knows where He wants to take us to get us to that point. If we'll just be patient and trust in Him. And I had some other examples of people that were willing to give in to God's timing. And first one I thought of was David. You know, David was anointed king when he was a young boy. And he went through quite a long time in his life when he knew he was going to be the next king. But you never hear him saying that, well, I'm going to be king. I deserve to be king. God anointed me king. He even had two chances to kill Saul, to take him out. And if he would have killed him, then he would have been the king. But David didn't do that. He knew God had a plan, and he knew that Saul also was God's anointed, and he wouldn't do that. Jesus, in the garden, he said, yet not what I will, but what you will. Jesus didn't want to go through what he went through, but yet he realized that there was a bigger plan. And then I thought of Paul. 2 Timothy 2, 8 through 10. Quick turn to that. It says, remember Jesus Christ, raised from the dead, descended from David. This is my gospel, for which I am suffering, even to the point of being chained like a criminal. But God's word is not chained. Therefore I endure everything for the sake of the elect, that they too may obtain the salvation that is in Christ Jesus with eternal glory. You know, we think of Paul, you know, being in prison, and wrongfully accused and, you know, thrown in prison. And, you know, our goal would be to free somebody that's wrongfully accused. But, you know, without Paul there in prison, he would have been able to go to all the other churches and visit these churches. He would have been able to visit Corinth and Galatians and Philippians and whatever, Philippi. And, you know, he would have been able to go to all these places and see them. But would we have all his letters that he wrote? Would he have wrote these letters if he would have gone to those places? You know, God has a plan. And maybe it's not what we have for us. Maybe it's not what we think is the best thing. But God has a plan, and God sees the bigger picture. I think of baking a cake, or, you know, if you have a cake you want to eat, you don't throw it in the oven and it's like, I need this cake in 10 minutes, let's crank it up to high. And, you know, oh, looks like it's done. Well, you get the top out, the top is done, but the insides are not done. If you get it out too soon, it's not going to be what it is. God has a plan for our lives. We can't look at what we're going through right now and say this is what we are. And I just want to close with one other verse. It's in Psalms 18, verse 30. It says, "As for God, His way is perfect. The word of the Lord is flawless. He is a shield for all who take refuge in Him." First part of that verse says, "As for God, His way is perfect." Maybe it's not what we see. Maybe it's not what we think it should be, like I said. But His ways are perfect. And He's got a plan if we're willing to be open to what He has for us and be obedient to what He has. This is all I have. We'll close in prayer. Dear God, I just thank You for Your word that we have, dear God. Thank You for the life of Joseph, the way he lived his life. Dear God, I pray that You would just help us to trust in You, to know that You have a plan for our lives. You have a purpose for things we go through. Everyone's life is different. Everyone has different things to go through. And I pray that You would just help us to trust in You in the good times and the bad times. Help us to realize that we are on Your time and that You have a bigger picture in sight, dear God. You're shaping and molding us for what You have for us. So, God, I've just asked that You would just help us to be open, be willing to trust in You and to allow You to work through us. Just ask You would just be with us today. In Your name I pray. Amen. You are dismissed.